You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. As a first-gen Mexican American, these conversations became my compass, offering insight, support, and an endless amount of inspiration. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking my dad the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear or straightforward, it rarely is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends, and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin.
Hello, everyone.
That's funny. I'm trying to put on my necklace and I'm like, here we go. Hello.
Hi. Welcome back to the Radically Loved podcast.
Yes. I'm so excited as I try to, you know what? Maybe today is just not the day that I'm going to wear it. Here's the thing. Like, you know, in your mind, when you have, you're determined to wear something or put something on because you're just like, this is going to make me feel
100%. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's going to give you that level of confidence. It's going to be the perfect thing you need to show up as your best self. It's so interesting how we adorn ourselves in particular ways. And
yes,
it makes us feel a very certain way.
Well, it's like the choices that we make, right? Why do we choose the type of, you know, sweater you're wearing, the color, the texture? Like, do you notice that? How do you make choices?
I've kind of been obsessed with this since I was a little one, actually. I've always loved clothing.
You love clothes. I know
I do. You know, I have a wee bit of a habit, maybe / addiction. but yeah, I've always chosen things, I think, first and foremost, aesthetically. So I'll choose like a color palette, just depending on what I'm feeling. It feels very intuitive to me. When I look at my closet, I think about something. I usually have an image in my mind, and then I'll go reach for that thing that matches the image I have in my head. And somehow I feel like I'm able to put together things that, you know, I feel like I was meant to live in a city like New York or LA.
Go on. Tell me more.
Portland doesn't really have that. You know, it's like, okay, I just got off a trail and now I'm going to go
work in my hiking clothes kind
and
of a vibe.
Put some other Patagonia or North Face wear on.
Your flannel, your Birkenstocks, your jeans, or your sweatpants, all is good. You can go out to a restaurant here in your pajamas and nobody will think twice about it. So it really, you know, the athleisure scene, I feel like, is Portland's way of dressing up. I feel like I'm getting dressed up if I put jeans on, honestly.
But okay, I do that's love, good.
I love fashion and I love to adorn myself. I love jewelry. I love to be creative and wear things that are a little bit more wacky. So I love going to New York City and just kind of shopping that places like Crossroads Consignment.
Yes.
And just getting wild. And
I was just at Crossroads last weekend.
Really?
Yeah. I was like needing to buy something. I needed to update my closet because I have so many things that I've gone through already. And like, you know, I'm filming content for Headspace. And so there's after a while, after 2 years of creating content for them, I've circled and cycled through everything in my closet. So I'm like, I need some good new pieces. But I'm such a big fan of that too. Like, I love going to Crossroads and getting something that's been loved before.
Yeah.
To wear, to just feel like, yeah, I mean, somebody's loved this item and now I get to love it for a certain amount of time. And plus, the quality is so different, right? Like, I love to look for things that are a little older because the materials that are being used are more high quality. It's like now we have such a different wearables culture where everything is one wash, single use, and then it gets ruined because of the textiles that are being used to fabricate our clothing.
Yeah. I mean, that for me, that's really a choice of another thing, much like how I prioritize spending money on food. I like to prioritize high quality items that last a long time, which are natural fibers. I've been gravitating more towards like the cotton, the linen, the silk. And it's when I'm shopping for stuff like that, it's I try to have the mindset of less is more. So it might be one item in my closet that I wear every day of the week, kind of a European style of getting dressed.
Love
but
this.
You can add accessories to change it. I mean, obviously change my underwear, my socks every day. But there might be like a jacket or a shirt or a pair of pants that I'll kind of dress up or down.
Yeah. You know, on TikTok, I follow some of these creators that are, you know, show you how to style like five items of clothing and you can make like 20 outfits or you can dress it up different ways that you may have not, you may have not thought about on your own. You know, I love that. I have a question. Like, what do you think what you wear impacts your mood and has your mood ever changed because of something that you wear?
Oh my gosh, 100%. And I've always been of that mindset of, you know, you dress for the job you want because I grew up in the corporate industry and I grew up saying like from my 20s to my 40s working in the corporate world, you know, I was always in environments like a law firm or venture capital where what you look like when you show up, it really does matter. And I needed that level of confidence in myself to be like, I can do this job. And if I'm uncomfortable in what I'm wearing, you know, if I'm more distracted by what it is that I put on, then I'm not focusing on the task at hand. So it does matter to me how I feel in what I'm wearing. And it does have an effect on, you know, how I show up and how I relate to people. Very much so. What about you?
Yeah, same. I mean, I've definitely felt kind of low mood or not a great energy. You know, it takes me back to when I was, you know, in my 20s and I had such a tenuous relationship with my body. And like, I'd go, like, my worst nightmare was going to try stuff on. Like, I hated going into a store and going into those fitting rooms with those terribly lit small spaces with mirrors that, like, showed you everything. Yeah. And it was always so anxiety producing for me because I'm like, I could be feeling great, but go in there and try something on. And if it doesn't fit, all of a sudden it's like, it's not a fabric or a pattern issue for the clothes. It's me, right? It's like, it has nothing to do with what I'm putting on. But I have also been in a place where
maybe I don't feel great. And I'm like, just get up, shower, and put some clothes on, like put some fresh clothes on, do your hair, put some mascara on. And it does make a, I mean, for me, I noticed it makes a difference. And similar to you, I didn't grow up in a corporate environment, but I mean, I worked in the beauty industry for for over a decade, you know? So I was taught to dress to impress, right? Which has its own other issues and complications that that came with. But I noticed that it made me feel good. Like it just made me feel good to be able to put a nice, you know, pair of shoes on and to, you know, get my hair. Well, I got my hair done because I worked at a hair salon. So that was really convenient, right?
Very convenient.
Yeah. So, you know, all I had to put on was some mascara and put my eyebrows on and I was like, good to go, you know? But yeah, I noticed that now, you know, in my 40s, like it still makes a difference. And we have a career very similarly where we don't necessarily have to wear a suit and or wear high heel or like dress up, which in a way for me sometimes is to my own detriment because I can just hang out in loungewear, like dressy loungewear, like what I'm wearing now. And just, I'm like, I'll just put a nice cozy sweater on and then, and feel good. But it doesn't matter. I think for me like that, it matters more to me to feel comfortable and to feel good. I can feel confident in a knit sweater. I can feel confident in a pair of heels. Like, I think at the end of the day, it's just what is going to make you feel good.
Yeah.
Right.
And paying attention to that and choosing based on that. And, you know, on the flip side of that, I always think about Steve Jobs. I think it was in his, well, I think it's pretty widely known that he wore that same outfit every day, that black shirt.
Which I love.
Jeans.
I mean, I think it's so genius.
It is genius. And he did that on purpose
to
avoid having to think about what it was that, because he didn't want to spend the brain power on his outfits, which is so genius. And I love that.
It is. And think about, for me, like, it irritates me if I have to spend more than 5 minutes to think of what to wear. Like it's one of the things that I find the most waste of time. And I can sit in traffic for hours on end commuting from the Valley to the West Side. And I still think that that extra few minutes or 30 minutes, okay, well, what am I going to wear? Like what, you know, I feel like I get jealous of Tori. He wears the same thing. It's like denim jeans and a t-shirt and like a cool belt. Like that's his uniform. And I'm like, it is so much easier for men to dress, you know, but I think that that has to do with conditioning and I'm not going to get into that whole
experience. That's a whole other topic.
Yeah, that's not really where I want the conversation. If all of you listening can relate to what we're talking about, if you want us to have this discussion, we're happy to do it, but you'll have to email us and tell us that you want us to talk about that because I feel like that is a whole, we should have an expert come on and
talk about that. Yeah.
So here's something that I want to chat with you about. I recently read Super Communicators by Charles Duhigg. Have you read this?
I haven't, but it's on my list now.
Please get it. I think we should have him on the show. It is such a great book. And as I was reading through, just thinking about, so the basis of the book is, it's called Super Communicators, How to Unlock the Secret Language of Connection. And it's the author that also wrote the New York Times bestseller, The Power of Habit. He's like a Pulitzer Prize winning author, journalist, and an incredible speaker. And I started reading the book and I was so fascinated by how communication is such an art. It's such an art of speaking. It's an art of listening. And the thing that resonated with me the most was the types of conversations that we have with people. So there was two things that really stood out. Basically, the gist is, are we having a conversation, a practical conversation, or are we having an emotional conversation? Mm-hmm. Because the example is, if I'm trying to express to my partner how I'm feeling, they're going to try and fix.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're coming at it from a practical perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm complaining about, this person did this, this, and that. In a way, I'm expressing an emotion and I'm expressing
you know, a vent or I'm venting. But sometimes your partner, if they're in a practical space, then they want to fix. It's like, why don't you just do this? And then sometimes we get triggered because
we're like, we didn't want you to fix it.
Yeah, no, I just want you to listen to me. So yeah.
I totally know what you're talking about, practical conversations versus emotional conversations. And when I've noticed that I get triggered too, when I'm just trying to vent and share something and my partner tries to immediately swoop in and fix it.
Ugh.
And one way that I've found that I can get ahead of something like that, but I have to be aware and have to have already like come in with this very consciously and say, hey, babe, I want to share something with you. I just need to vent. I don't want you to fix it. I don't want any solutions. I just need a sounding board. And if I get ahead of it in that way, usually 9.9 times out of 10, it's a fine and lovely and very helpful and actually emotionally connecting conversation versus it ending up being a triggering practical one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think after decades of being with somebody, you begin to learn those things. And truth be told, you know, Tori and I have gone to therapy before. I know you've gone to therapy before. And I think that some of the tools that I learned in therapy were to set those guardrails, to be able to set those parameters. And I think that's such a brilliant way to approach a conversation, especially if somebody's wanting to have an emotional conversation and somebody else is trying to have a practical conversation. One of the things that, and I've not finished the book entirely, I'm just like kind of halfway, mm-hmm. but there's this thing that he talks about called looping for understanding, which mm-hmm. I love. So basically it's how do we communicate in an effective way so that we can connect. And one of the ways that he talks about was like, okay, well, I'll ask you a question.
Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end because there's a special offer happening and this could be exactly what you need. Okay, here we go. Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here is what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why I exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are best in class. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They are so confident that they offer 365-day money-back guarantee. Just go to www.bioptimizers.com/radically loved. Use the promo code radically loved10. You can get gifts with your purchase. You can get 2 travel size bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. Act fast. This is a limited time offer. Go to bioptimizers.com/radically loved and use the promo code radically loved10.
Tessa, I know that yoga is such a big part of your life. Mm. Like, what was so inspiring about being a yoga teacher that drew you in?
Oh my gosh, that's a big question. I don't know if there's one thing, and I know you're not asking for one thing, but I think about my childhood. Both of my parents had a yoga practice as I was growing up, so it was definitely part of how I grew up. I never really saw myself as a teacher. And I had a lot of people in my life over time, in my 20s and my 30s, who kept saying, you should be a teacher. You should be a teacher. And I was like, I want this practice to be my own. This is my practice. And I think I was most inspired to become a teacher by one of my close friends who was also a teacher of mine when I moved to Vancouver and reestablished my yoga practice, my asana practice, because I had kind of let it go by the wayside for a few years. So I reconnected with my practice when I moved back up to the Pacific Northwest. And that teacher became a close friend of mine. And he just, I don't know, saw something in me that I wasn't ready to see yet. But he's the one actually, Rosie, introduced me to your teacher training. I don't know how he found you. Aaron Goodman. Thanks, Aaron. You're my buddy. I love you. Shout out.
Shout out to Aaron.
Yeah. And we both signed up for your teacher training together. He wanted a little bit more of a vinyasa foundational yoga teacher training under his belt because he came from the Bikram lineage. And that's a whole different topic. But anyways, we went through that. We went through that teacher training together and it was life changing. And I realized that as I began to take the seat of the teacher throughout teacher training, that it was, I'm like getting tinglies just as I say this. I'm getting tinglies. It was just inevitable. It was like this thing that kept calling to me. Life kept putting these things in my path. People kept saying, mentors kept questioning me, why aren't you teaching? You should be teaching. And finally, I was just like, oh, I guess I'll listen. You know, Ryan, we just had Martha Beck on the podcast a few weeks ago, and it reminds me of, remember we were talking with her about writing and those that get that call to write at an early age. She said something along the lines of, you know, it's hardest for you because you want it so bad. And on the flip side of that, teaching, I didn't really want it that bad. So it kind of came naturally, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of a long-winded answer. Does that answer
your question?
No, that's
great. Yeah. So if I could, let me see if I got this right. What drew you into teaching, it was something that you had been introduced to for a very long time from your parents. So you always had like a genuine interest into yoga and yogic philosophy. And it wasn't actually part of your plan to become a teacher. In fact, it sounds like you kind of resisted it for a little while, but it seems like a lot of people in your life felt like it was a natural progression for you to get into this field. Did I get that right?
Ooh, yes. And you know what? I feel so validated and heard.
We'll see. So that's called looping for understanding. So yeah. What the process is you ask typically a deep question, or a question that is innately curious, genuine, authentic. And then you listen to what the person's saying and you repeat it back, not using their words, but your own sort of interpretation of what they're saying. And then you ask them if you got that right. And and you just, without me even prompting you, you just said, oh, I feel so seen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So... yeah. Do you want to give it a try?
Well, yeah. But can I ask a question first?
Of
before
course.
Before I ask my deep question?
Yeah. You don't even have to ask a deep question. You're just doing it now naturally.
Oh, I love this. So I'm thinking about developing relationship and getting to that point in relationship. And maybe we're assuming that this kind of conversation happens already. It happens only after you've developed that level of trust with someone to be able to ask that deep question.
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
No.
I'm thinking about it from the lens of like, let's say we show up at a party or a community of yogis and I'm meeting people for the first time and I'm wanting to get to know someone by asking a deep question. I'm kind of thinking about it. Well, how would I even start? Is it awkward to go with that deep question?
No,
first?
Because I mean, well, it doesn't have to be like deep. So I'm going to retract that, but it should just be something authentic and something honest, right?
Yes.
So you're at a party and somebody, and you say, oh, like, how are you doing today? You know, what part of town do you live? Oh, I live in Southeast Portland. Oh, really? Like, how long have you lived in Southeast Portland? Oh, I've lived there for about 2 years. Wow. Oh, that sounds really interesting. What do you love about being in Southeast Portland? What drew you, you know, right?
Yeah.
So it just naturally progresses that natural curiosity. And sometimes, you know, my question to Charles when we have him on the podcast, hopefully at some point soon.
Yeah.
Hoping maybe we'll send this to him and be like, come on the show. But my question would be,
how do you have a conversation with somebody who doesn't want to have a conversation with you? But that's a separate thing. I think in terms of just the general population, yes, what you said, I think it's you just have to find your way in, right? And if the person is receptive and there's a reciprocity happening, then it's sort of a natural evolution that you can continue to sort of pull that thread, as you like to say, right? So you can continue to connect more. In terms of a romantic relationship, in my experience, I'm finding, because I'm using an experiment right now with myself and my relationship, because Tori and I are in a little bit of a spot. We're having a communication breakdown. So I tried this on Tori yesterday. We're driving out to go see a show and we're in the car and I just was like, how are you feeling? And he's like, it totally caught him off guard. And he goes, like, feeling with what? Like mental, physical, emotional. And I'm like, why don't we go with emotional? And then he just went into this whole diatribe of everything that's been going on and just, you know, work and, you know, things that everybody can relate to, just the regular stresses of life. And I reflected back to him. I said, okay, if I'm hearing you say that these are the things that are really weighing heavy on you. And it seems like to me that it's kind of causing a little bit of inertia and lethargy. We're both kind of feeling a little like trudging through the mud. I didn't bring myself into the equation, right? Because I'm not trying to talk about myself. It's about him, right? As I'm reciprocating. And I said, it sounds like, you know, this is how you're feeling. Did I get that right? And he goes, yeah. And then it was almost instinctually. And he goes, how about you? And then I started to talk and then we ended up getting into a fight, but that's a whole separate thing. but we didn't get into a fight, but it's almost like when you're creating a space for you to be able to communicate, and this is just my knowledge, I'm not speaking to the book Super Communicators directly. I'm saying when you're choosing to have this type of conversation, because Tori and I have kind of not been on the same page lately, it's probably not best for me to have this conversation with him on our way to dinner to go out. Right? Yeah. It's like, this is a conversation more conducive to an afternoon, maybe when we're done for the day, or, you know, just a different time where we could actually get into a conversation, right? And if I'm being completely honest, it was a little manipulative of me to have that conversation, because I knew I wanted it to go to a place where I wanted to state my grievances. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that it blew up in my face, obviously, because that wasn't the right time. But at the same time, like, you know, we were able to hash it out and we're good. You know, we understand that we're having a communication breakdown. And so we both agree, you know, every time, you know, we have this experience, we always both agree, like, we want to work this out. So let's figure out what the best container is for this conversation, right?
And so is that kind of like, okay, let's put a bookmark in this and pick it up again later and go about our evening. Is that something that you're able to do? Like, if you get into a heated conversation, knowing you're going to go out and try to have a good time on a date or go see a show, can you pivot that in that way?
I think there are certain things that we just know each other so well. Like, we could, sometimes I don't feel like I feel like a little chihuahua, right? I'm just like, rah, 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 rah. Just like, I want to go and I want to go, you know, we're going to go right now. And he's very much like, I need to walk away. I need to process. I need to give you your space, or I don't want to, you know, let you sort of take over the energetic field of my space. So have your situation, I'm going to go to the other room type of thing. And that's fine. And sometimes, you know, like, it's helpful to have people walk away
I find for me, I don't like it because I'm very confrontational and I want to get things solved and I want to talk about it and I want to talk about it right then. But I find that even having that space really allows me to kind of settle down. And so I think to your point, we kind of bookmark it, but it's kind of an unsaid thing. It's like we both just say, now is not the best time. Can we agree? Can we agree? And most of the languaging is coming from me, obviously, you know, it's like, which also is a side note I resent sometimes because I'm always the one that's trying to have these very constructive conversations and it can get irritating sometimes. But if I'm looking at the big picture, we just both agree that now is not a good time to have this conversation. Let's have a good time and let's just talk about it later, you know?
Yeah.
How about you? I mean, you've been in a long-term relationship. When you have a discussion with your partner, like, are you able to go on or does it ruin the whole night?
Oh, it's so hard for me to pivot. I am also like that chihuahua. I really want resolution in the moment. And I get loud and I start to yell. I get angry, very externally angry. I show poor Jorge my anger and that does not work for him. He totally shuts down when I do that. And so it's good that he can walk away and separate us because when we were, you know, newlyweds, we got into some really bad fights. We had the cops called on us once.
What? Oh my God. go on.
Oh my gosh. I could tell that whole story. My
red.
Face is turning red. Look, it looked like a tomato. I mean, Jorge and I have told this story since, you know, then. And now we look back and it's kind of funny. So I think he'd be okay with me sharing it. And babe, so sorry if you don't want me to air this, but I'm going to share this story. I hope that's okay. So we're living in this apartment in Ashland, Oregon. Jorge was still in college. I had just graduated and we were newlyweds. We'd been married for like, I don't know, 6 months. And we're just trying to figure out how to live with each other because Jorge had been in the United States for all of a year and he was learning English and he was trying to get his degree and he was paying his way through college with cash because he didn't qualify for any federal grants because of his immigrant status. So looking back on that time, he had a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And then enter me. I'm 25. I'm very insecure. I'm very jealous. Jorge's a gorgeous man. And I think I've said this before, but the ratio of women to men in Ashland is 3-1. So there's not
said it before,
a lot
but let's
of men.
Make that point. Let's
okay,
make that
I want
point.
This to be clear. I'm setting the stage. So I'm sure we were like fighting over something that I was feeling insecure about and feeling jealous about. And, you know, we both co-create this experience together. It's never just me. It's never just him. And, it got to the point where I think I threw like my, I had a Nalgene bottle. I think I threw it at him and it like,
a what
it was
bottle?
Like my, a Nalgene bottle. It's, you know, those big water bottles that they're like 36 ounces that everyone carries around today. And I mean, I could hold up my Stanley. Stanley is the modern
equivalent.
Day. Yeah.
Okay.
I threw this at him because I, like I said, I would have these rages where I would get externally loud and sometimes kind of violent. And I'm not proud to say it, but I'm glad I've got it kind of under control now. Not kind of, I'm way better. Anyways, I threw this thing at him. Our neighbor downstairs must have heard us shouting and things crashing and called the cops.
Right.
Like I said, Jorge, we were just newly married. So he was not a resident. He was applying for his green card status. So cops show up. So Jorge happens to be wearing this quintessential tank top. It's white. The cops get here. They bang on our door. And I think they asked me a series of questions like, do I feel safe? Blah, blah, blah. Is anyone home? Jorge was right there. We were clearly both upset. They took Jorge out onto the porch and put him in handcuffs.
Oh, goodness.
It was sobering as F. Sobering as fuck. We were both just like, oh my God, we need to calm down. We need some help. And yes, therapy has been a tool for me for as long as I can remember. And in that moment, I was like, oh Lord, we need help. And I don't even remember what your question was, Rosie, but
no, I said, can you move on from it? Like, does it?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Does it? But something like that, I mean, that's very traumatic. I have a similar story. There were no cops involved, but I do remember having a big blowout with Tori like that. And in front of his parent, it was just not a good look. And same thing in my early 20s, same experience, jealous, like all of that. But I feel like, it's like when we reflect back and look at our experience when you are in a relationship and you have these big sort of moments, they either make or break you, right? So they either help enhance your ability to communicate, you know what your boundaries are. So have you, it's almost like you're it's the tipping point, right? So were you able to get to a place where you realize, okay, that's the line, we don't cross that line, or you pushed the boundaries a little bit? I'm just curious.
I think I realized that I needed to calm down. You know, I needed to find other tools to manage my rage. And I wouldn't say it was immediate. It wasn't like, oh, a light switch turned on and I realized, that I had taken it too far.
Yeah.
But looking back, I do see a steady progression away from that kind of behavior. And it was in tandem with us going to therapy together. I always said I was going to have it as a tool and I thought we needed to go together. It took some convincing, but it really did help us. And now I'm much better at it. And now it's not physical, but yes, I have my moments where I just won't let it go. I'm like a dog with a bone and I want to resolve it right now. And I need to get my big feelings out. And I do think that that is, on my part, it's a little bit, selfish isn't the word I want to say, but it's the only word that's coming up. So I'll use it. Because, you know, if he's not ready to process it in that moment and I'm not being calm and he's not hearing me anyways, but I'm still forcing the issue, are we really getting anywhere productive?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have the same thing. I call it a capricious moment, right? Where you're just being like very impulsive. And yeah, I mean, it's tough, you know, when you're having big emotions and you're not feeling like you're being met or you're not connecting with your partner. And especially if you don't speak the same language and depending on what your triggers are, you know, I think when you've been with somebody for a long time, we get a lot of, we garner a lot of resentment. There is a lot of apathy towards certain issues that don't get resolved in the way that you want them to. In a way, it's, in my experience, it's a real balance of learning how to compromise. What are the things that you're willing to deal with and what are the things that you're not willing to deal with? And, you know, I think of the moments that have really shaped our relationship. And I have to really, again, pull back, like I said, from our discussion or a little argument yesterday, that we both have to agree that we want things to work out. And then at that point, it sort of alleviates the tenuous nature of whatever the discussion is, you know, and we're still very much, you know, regardless of how long we've been together, I mean, we still have the same types of, you know, issues. And I do have to say, for me at this age, and I've talked about it before, like I do believe that hormones take, have a place in all of this. I think that, you know, I'm still trying to figure out like how to balance myself, like what the best approach is, you know, how are my meds? Like, am I in balance? Am I out of balance? Is it really that this thing is bothering me? Is it really that, and when I say meds, I mean my hormone medication. Yeah. So I think that has a lot to do with the relationship as well. And just going back to the whole conversation, I was really excited to talk about this book because it's really leaving an impression. And just like when I read The Power of Habit, you know, it's like we create these new neurological pathways for us to deal with conflict. Mm-hmm. And
I think that given your experience with Jorge and then my experience with Tori in our past, like, I think it's harder to resolve. People might think like, oh, it's easier to resolve conflict. It's yes and no. Yes, it's easier to resolve conflict when you've been together for a long time because you can just cut straight to the end and you don't have to kind of go through the minutiae of trying to figure out, and is it really this? Is it really that? But no, because there are things that are compounded, right? Like, it's compounding interests. Like, over time, it's just the same thing that keeps happening over and over and over again. And maybe sometimes it doesn't bother you. Maybe sometimes it does. And over time, that starts to chip away at you. And I think what I'm finding now is if you don't deal with those compounding issues, they will rear their ugly heads at some point. You know, it's like I went to go see my doctor not that long ago, and, you know, I'm a hypochondriac, right? We've talked about this. Like, I am doctor Googling every little thing. And so, and I have a great doctor. She's amazing. And I, you know, was having, you know, a couple, some symptoms, and I'm like, what is this? I Googled it and it said I had this. And she's like, you don't. She's like, your blood work would have revealed it if it had something. She says for most people, when there's something wrong, inevitably that thing rears its ugly head, right? Because it's like very present.
Yeah.
Right. And so that statement stayed with me when I was thinking about the relationship. I was like, there's a point in this whole communication, connection, romantic experience where if there are issues, inevitably they're going to rear their ugly head. Right. And if you don't deal with them, if you don't communicate them, if you don't process them in the right way, then it can cause a huge communication breakdown, right? Which that's why I was saying this book has really come at a time where I need it the most. And I find that that happens to me all the time. It's like I'm looking for something and then all of a sudden, somehow it just finds its way into my field. And yeah, I think it's one of the things that I am really excited to learn more about. I'm curious how this evolves or doesn't evolve, you know, but it's, you know, it's definitely a process.
Oh, it's so a process. And I love that you called it, you were talking about trying an experiment in your communication with Tor lately. And I think that's such a helpful lens to take when you're trying something new, because it takes the pressure off to get it right.
Yeah.
And, you know, quote unquote, right, whatever that means, but let it be something that's interesting. Like, oh, I'm going to try this thing and we'll see what happens as a result. How cool is that? You can put on your scientist hat, and that allows that, objective reality to, instead of being caught in the tornado, you can kind of take a step outside and watch what's unfolding before you. So I love that.
Yeah.
I would love to just ask you my question to you in response to it. So it is looping for understanding.
Yes.
And so my question to you, Rosie, is as you look forward to the next, you know, decades of your life, we're now 40s. What are you, maybe it's a two-part question or you could choose one or the other, but I'm curious what you're looking forward to most, and or if there's something on your bucket list that you really want to make sure you do, this sounds kind of morbid, before you die. Or before you death. Can't do it anymore.
I love talking about death. Death doesn't scare me. I think it's, you know, we're all, every single one of us is going to go through it. So yeah, I'll answer the bucket question, your bucket list question, because I feel like I've been thinking about that lately. I've been thinking about how I'm in such a routine right now, right? I'm working full time. I'm going to school full time. I've no little to no leisure time. And it's been by the time people are listening to this, it'll be 6 months exactly. And that's like half a year. And I've not had an opportunity to really
do anything, like go anywhere, like take a moment. I've had like a day, maybe, I don't know, a total of one day a month. So 6 days where I've had off, like genuinely off, where I'm not doing anything. And I know that this is just a short period of time. I'm not going to be in school forever. Famous last words. But I feel like the thing that I've really been thinking about the most is, doing those things that make me happy. Like I haven't gone on an epic hike. I love walking and going on hikes. Like I haven't been on a hike for a really long time, or, you know, I haven't just traveled somewhere to go hang out with a friend. You know, I've not been up to Oregon in 2 years, you know, and it's like my happy place. You know, I just want to go and be in nature and smell trees and be in the wilderness. So I think that that's something that I want to incorporate more of. And I hope that I do, I think. And as I get older, I think that those things are more and more important to me. I think finding those moments of solace, we're so super connected right now. We're taking in so much information constantly all day long, text messages, emails, news, social media. It's like our mind doesn't have the time. We're not giving our brains the time to digest the information. You know, our bodies need time to digest. There is no fast forward button. It's like it does the process that it does. And our minds, I feel like sometimes are so bombarded with external factors that we don't really give ourselves the time of respite. So I think that as I get older, I would like to find more moments of respite.
Okay. So what I heard you say, Rosie, is right now in your life, which you acknowledge is temporary, you're working full time, you're in a routine, and it, you know, it's, you don't get that much time off. So maybe it's one day a month, which is really not a lot of time. And what you're looking forward to in your future, what you want more of in your future, what's on your bucket list is what it sounds like is reconnecting to nature, going for walks, smelling trees, having space between being connected to the digital landscape and the ability to reconnect with yourself and your soul, and maybe go on a long trip or go visit a friend or come up to Oregon, come see me. Yeah, not to insert myself in that, but what you want more of in your future is leisure time, time to connect with nature, time to connect with yourself. Did I get that right?
You did. You did get that right. See, isn't that so nice? I love that. So yes, thank you. Thank you for that. You did get that right. And I feel so seen, and it makes such a difference. You know, it really physiologically, I hope your takeaway from today's episode, if there's one, that it's your ability to communicate with others and to connect with others, because there is also, this book has so much science behind how it really helps our brain, how it creates, more emotional awareness. It creates a feeling of deep connection with other people. And it is so impactful. He talks about the study about how, you know, when we live in communities, we live longer as opposed to being in isolation. And so I really recommend, I can't recommend this book enough. And I really hope that we can get him on the show, because he's so brilliant. And obviously, as I'm sharing here with all of you today, I'm learning so much. And yeah, I'm so grateful that you're all here. Thanks, Tessa, for the questions. And, yeah, those of you that are new here, welcome, welcome, welcome. I hope that you enjoy this podcast. For those of you that are here, thank you so much for your continued support. We hope that you enjoyed. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. The ratings and the reviews really help us. Like they, you know, we provide all of this content for free. It doesn't cost you anything. And the only thing that we ask is that you support us, that you share the content, because it really helps us get partnerships that'll continue to pay for this podcast to get produced. So thank you all so much for your continued support and for being here.
Bye. Love you.
Bye. Love you. Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.